This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I was going to set up this next story about the sequester, the budget cuts coming at the end of the month, with a piece of tape from President Obama. Today, he did one of those get a bunch of regular citizens on a set of risers behind him and make a speech things this morning, trying to convince Congress to do something about the sequester. Anyway, I was listening along, trying to figure out what part of it might be good to play for you. Most of it was pretty boilerplate politic, in truth be told, so I'd just about given up when he got to this.
This is not an abstraction. There are people whose livelihoods are at stake. There are communities that are going to be impacted in a negative way.
That is absolutely true at the center of the sequester universe in Washington, D.C., where a whole lot of people are starting to get nervous. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer discovered they are everywhere she goes.
We're a strange breed here in Washington, a city of geeks. We follow the lurchings of Congress like normal people follow their favorite baseball team. We kind of have to. Government is the biggest game in town, but now it's getting ridiculous. Sequester stress is seeping into every corner of my life. I decided to drag my tape recorder around for a couple of days to give you a taste of it. My day usually begins with a caffeine fix in the kitchen down the hall from the Marketplace Bureau. There's a cluster of offices around the kitchen. I've got a number of kitchen buddies.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
One of them is Jennifer Lockman.
How are you?
Good. You've got your coffee.
Yep.
So let's go into your office.
Great.
Jennifer is executive director of the U.S. branch of a nonprofit called MAG, which stands for Mines Advisory Group. They remove mines and surplus weapons from war-torn countries. Jennifer's office gets 95% of its funding from the State Department. If the sequester hits, the State Department's budget would be cut by around 5%. Jennifer Lockman knows that could filter down to her.
It is one of the most stress-inducing situations that I've ever faced at work.
Jennifer says her staff is banding together to fight the stress, going out to more happy hours and maybe throwing an extra cocktail into the mix. Other sequester sufferers have different ways to cope. At lunchtime, I head out to some downtown food trucks. I meet Deanna Collins. She works at a law firm. It depends on government contracts, which could be cut by the sequester, causing a wave of layoffs. Collins is very worried. She's smoking more. I ask how much more.
Before everything started to kind of fall apart, about a pack a week, I'm maybe now to a pack every 3 days.
Other people I talk to are trying to tune out the sequester buzz. Shelley Goldsban works for a medical research firm. Some of that research is government funded. She feels powerless to stop the sequester.
So I've just sort of given up and sort of just am sitting on the sidelines with the bowl of popcorn, watching everything go down in a flaming ball of death.
Okay, then. Maybe it's time to move on. Maybe things will be different once I leave work for the day. My neighbors are having a potluck. Hopefully they're not on a sequester death watch. No such luck. There's the usual talk of real estate, but with a sequester tinge. My neighbor Sterling Merring is a realtor. He says the Washington market has been red hot lately. He even made a few sales over the holidays, but now he's worried about a sequester slump.
You know, I just know how fragile the market is. It can stop on a dime.
At that point, my husband and I head home with our twin toddlers, who are just about the only people in my world not talking about the sequester. And that's only because they can't say the word.
Buster.
Unfortunately, they do eventually master it.
Sequester.
Then they want to know more. As in any toddler interrogation, one word is repeated over and over.
Why?
Which actually is a very good question.
Why?
In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.